Today is December 23rd, 2006, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
This week's show is going to be all over the map. We're mopping up some stuff from previous shows. We're chatting a little bit about some cool products. Let's just dive right into it. Jeff, hit it.
Okay. The iPhone moniker has finally been applied to a real product, but interestingly enough, it isn't a product from Apple. Linksys launched its voiceover IP phone products on Monday for PCs. Unlike the fabled iPhone, which is expected to be a more traditional smart cell phone, the Linksys iPhone products operate through internet connections and are compatible with applications like Skype and Yahoo Messenger.
Now that iPhone is officially tied to a Linksys product and doesn't include Mac support, speculators and rumor mongers apparently are going to have to come up with some new term to describe the phone product, which many people are talking about. We've discussed this at some length on this show. Some people are expecting it to see it in January at Macworld Expo. Jeff, in your article, you suggested some names: Dial-O-Mac, iPod Chit Chat. Oh, gosh. Apple Talk, of course, is already taken, as you pointed out.
Yeah, and sadly, I think Apple Talk would probably be the best. All right, all you listeners out there, if you have any opinion on all of this, you are totally welcome to tell us what you think. And if you want to send an audio comment to us as well, we'll even play it on the show. You can send those, of course, to roundup@macobserver.com.
And so also iPod video game fans have two new ways to fill their downtime. Apple has added Sudoku and Royal Solitaire to its iPod games over at the iTunes store. Each game is priced at $5 US and requires a fifth generation video capable iPod to play them. I will say I'm still waiting on banner name titles. I'll admit I'm really surprised, and I know some people in the industry were pretty surprised when it turned out that Apple had in fact been working on iPod games and hadn't been working with any of the big game houses like, for example, Electronic Arts or Aspyr. I mean, the iPod is a big platform. There are tens of millions of them out there, more than, for example, the number of PlayStation 3s and Wii's sold combined. That's a pretty big installed user base, and one would think that the big game houses would be really interested in getting into that game. And in fact, that sounds like a good subject for another thing for audio comments, you know, user-submitted context machines.
Exactly. And if you didn't have your pencil out ready to write down that email address ahead of time, grab it now. It's roundup@macobserver.com.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the other thing in news that we wanted to talk about this week, we got a lot of feedback about our last show on phase change memory, or rather the context machine had a lot of stuff about phase change memory in it. In particular, there was one email from Dell from Texas, who not Dell the company, this is D-E-L, short for Delbert. And Dell, thank you very much for your email. From Texas, wrote in with a terrific email that had a lot of details about how phase change memory is implemented. He appears to have followed this very closely for a number of years now. Jeff, you want to give us the kind of 60-second summary about what he was talking about?
Sure. Dell's email explains that there's essentially one alloy that everyone, which means Samsung, Intel, IBM, and everyone else that's doing this, is using as their phase-changing material. And the technology is controlled by a company called Avanix. And last week, Ricky was saying the memory manufacturers would have to alter their facilities or build new ones. And Dell explained that one of the benefits of PCM is that it requires fairly little modification to existing manufacturing techniques. It, in essence, is just adding a few more steps to the process.
Now, in my defense, it's a very good point. Of course, I was talking about how they were going to have to, you know, modify their facilities to make all of this work. In my defense, I will point out that adding a few steps is not as simple as it sounds either. And I spent a little bit of time looking at some more information about this. If you look at images of these phase change memory circuits that people are building, in one image, you'll see a 20 nanometer wide slice of this material that's suspended across a channel. Now, it doesn't matter how few steps that takes when you're building it into a process like this. That is never going to be trivial, particularly if you're going to build it into a world-class facility that's going to ramp up to building hundreds of thousands, millions of these, tens of millions of these every year. But the point, of course, is very well taken and absolutely correct. That is the great benefit of it. That's one of the reasons people are so focused on phase change memories, because they can implement it into the existing stuff. And there aren't going to be bulldozers breaking ground on new facilities to make this happen, which is one of the things that's really cool about PCM.
Oh, but wait, there's more. Dell has some more points for us. He argued convincingly that we'll start to see PCM become widely commercially available, believe it or not, about a year from now. And that makes sense, too. And the really interesting question will be how quickly the marketplace adopts PCM. And so what we're looking at is how long before we find the chips being used in place of RAM, and how long before we see them replacing hard drives, and will they replace flash memory?
And those are the big matzo ball questions, right? And PCM offers something different. It has its own competitive advantage in each of those areas. For example, against RAM, it wins with the fact that it's non-volatile, that it holds data when it's powered down. Against hard drives, it's the fact that it doesn't have any moving parts and that you can access the memory cells randomly as opposed to having to access them sequentially like you do with that spinning disk in a hard drive. And against flash, it's speed. It's supposed to be much faster than flash memory. And again, at the end of the day, we just have to wait and see whether the price per megabyte is going to be low enough to permit widespread adoption. Because that's going to be the really critical thing. Do Apple making all of its iPods and all the people making thumb drives and all the people that put RAM in computers and hard drive manufacturers, do people start to say, hey, wait a minute, it might be a little more expensive, but it's not. It's the incremental cost is small enough that it's worth doing this for the added features, the added benefit. So, yeah, thank you very much, Dell, for sending those comments along, and certainly for clearing up some of the errors in the last show. And everyone else, keep this in mind. We're reading the emails. We definitely love it when you write in. And as Jeff has been saying, you can reach us, as always, at roundup@macobserver.com.
Okay, that's three times in a row. If you didn't have your pencil by that time, shame on you. Okay, how about if we just move on into the product roundup? We do have some cool odds and ends that we can talk about this week.
Yeah, I was thinking we were talking about preparing for this show. I was thinking we could just kind of, there's some random things I feel like we haven't dealt with. A couple weeks ago, I reviewed the Behringer XM8500, which is this handheld dynamic mic. I've been using it for the last two shows, and I'm using it again on this show. I've discovered that if I mic myself a little bit further away, I'm standing right now, maybe 6 to 8 inches away from the microphone, right in front of it. I have a little pop filter on it, a little foam thing that I put on top of the mic. I found that's how I recorded the last show, except without the pop filter, and I really liked the sound of being a little further away. It wasn't quite as mushy. So I'm curious what you guys think about this sound. I think that it's a nice balance. I like working with a dynamic mic, but all the dynamics I'd looked at by and large had been pretty muddy. So I think this might be the way I end up working. But let me know if you guys have a different opinion or a concurring opinion. I'm not sure exactly what I'm settling on. But yeah, and Jeff, you're still using that Rode microphone.
I am.
We talked a little bit about software for it. What'd you discover this week?
It looks like the software is Windows only. So that means we couldn't play with it and test it out, because of course I'm going to test it on a Mac.
So what's up now?
So what's up now is I have the input level cranked all the way up on this microphone, and I'm a couple inches away from it. And when we do that, it seems that I'm getting a good audio level for you. But geez, I need to find some way to be able to get some serious input into this without having to crank everything all the way up to 11.
Yeah, and that is for anyone that's looking at this stuff. Dynamic mics generally are harder to get a big strong signal out of, and we will we'll definitely ask Rode about that. It might be that it's something that they can address with a firmware update. It might be that it really is in order to get that's just the signal they get out of it. So I don't know. We'll look into it a little bit. I actually think that it sounds. I think you sound great on this microphone. It sounds like it's a nice sturdy piece of equipment, so hopefully we can boost the signal a little bit.
And if not, I'll just have to learn not to bounce my face off the microphone.
That's right, and if anyone doesn't have that image in their head, it's because he's getting the signal he's getting in part by getting right up on top of the mic. So that's what's going on there.
Indeed.
There was another thing I wanted to talk about. Jeff, you, after the show last week, you said, hey, I just got this iPod Shuffle as a present, and it's really cool. And we were talking about it a little bit. I didn't realize at the time because mine hadn't arrived. This was the holiday present for the TMO staff, and mine came on Monday. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what you thought of this thing.
Actually, I think this is fracking cool. It's if you haven't had a chance to play with an iPod Shuffle that's not attached to some type of security device, you need to find someone that has one so you can play with it. I mean, I think this is just stunning. I can't find a seam on the case anywhere, and it just the whole little thing with using the dock with the audio plug to charge and send data and even listen to music if you want. It's just great. And that special little touch of having the little system status LED appear on the top and the bottom. Okay, that's brilliant. You can see the little light no matter how you attach this thing to yourself.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's a beautiful product. And in a sense, there are Apple things. It's amazing when you have something that's that small, how many bizarre little refinements they find to put onto it, like the LED in two places, or the fact that the hinge is hidden. If you look at it from the side, as the hinge opens and closes, you can't see how the hinge is attached or how it's sliding. You have to look on the inside. It's hidden in the same way that if you've looked at the back of the Apple Cinema displays, it's hidden there as well. So, I mean, it's stuff like that, or the John and Dave reviewed the Shuffle in great detail on their show, so we don't need to spend too much time on it, but John talked about how it's like triangles and circles, and I mean, there's all of this really neat visual stuff on it. But the thing that got me when I opened it up, it wasn't any of that stuff that we just talked about or any of the stuff that John and Dave talked about when they reviewed it. Sure, it's a terrific product. Yes, it's very elegantly done. Yes, it has incredible attention to detail. But the thing that got to me, and this is kind of a vintage realization by now, but it was the knowledge that first of all, there's a 1 gigabyte chip and a battery and some kind of controlling module in there, processor in there to
right. And where in the world could you put the battery in here?
And then sort of piggybacked on that, exactly what 1 gigabyte of data really represents. I mean, you could walk into any room with an 1/8-inch jack. And you could fill the place. I mean, you could fill a house. You could fill a stadium with sound for 24 hours with this thing. And it's the size of a postage stamp. I mean, it was that has nothing to do with Apple, and it has nothing to do with the iPod, and it has nothing to do with anything that we normally talk about on the show. But it was just, it's that realization, how much information is packed into that tiny little piece of aluminum. Totally blew me away.
Oh, it is absolutely stunning. This is a marvel of engineering.
Word.
Word.
The and of course, one of the things that goes along with this, the if anyone's never seen an iPod shuffle, the new iPod shuffles, they have this built-in clip. Misha Sakalaropoulou actually reviewed something made by Digital Lifestyle Outfitters, DLO, called the Action Jacket. It's specifically for the second generation iPod shuffle. And I think his review said, you know, it's a perfectly fine product, but it is amazing to me that anyone, I mean, this if there is any if there is any piece of electronics in the world that is immune to accessorizing, it's this one. I don't know what you can do to this thing to accessorize
Well, apparently DLO does, or so it
it.
seems.
Actually, no, I take that back. There is one thing that you can do to this to accessorize it, which is to put a dongle on it that plugs into that eighth inch jack and turns it into a USB key.
Okay, now you remember right after the new shuffle came out, I said there's a market for someone to make a little dongle plug-in so that you can just stick your shuffle directly into a USB port. And sure enough, I've already seen two products come out that do just that.
So they do exist.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
I was afraid that the fact that they've overloaded that plug, that it's both a headphone jack and a data port jack, meant that it was going to be some proprietary plug and people would have to pay Apple $20 in order to make the dongle that attaches to it. I was afraid that's what was going to happen. But if it's already out there, hey.
Yep, I've seen two products already. I believe we have covered both of them at iPodObserver.com.
Right on. iPodObserver.com, people. It's a terrific site. I've heard of that.
It is the sister site to the Mac Observer.
Right on. Hey, there was another thing. I don't even have this in the notes that I had for us to talk about right now, but I wanted to hear you talk about it. BeeTunes. You reviewed a thing called BeeTunes this week.
Yes.
Tell us about BeeTunes. That thing looked awesome.
You know, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect from BeeTunes when I first started playing with it. Okay, I should set the Wayback Machine so that we can tell people what this is. BeeTunes is an application that works along with iTunes, and it makes playlists for you, but instead of having to go through and select things yourself or to build a smart playlist that says go for this genre but not this artist or however you want to build your smart playlist, it analyzes all of your music and then it kind of categorizes everything for you based on beats per minute and different audio magical whatever things that are inside the files. And then you say, well, I like this song and this song. And then it says, okay, I'll build you a playlist where all the music fits together with that really well. And that's exactly what it does, and it does it really well. I was absolutely blown away when I started playing with it because I thought, okay, yeah, I'll probably get something that sounds a lot like the playlists that I've been making myself with the Smart Playlist feature in iTunes. And what I found is that I was wrong. It can make better playlists instantly. It's an amazing little tool, and everyone should at least go play with it for the test period, which is I think it's like a 7-day trial.
Cool.
And if you really like it, I believe it's about $20 for the product. But I thought it was really, really cool. Go take a look at it.
Yeah, that's I read that. I said, "Hey, that is awesome."
It is.
So I
Now,
got to check
it
that
is slow in the beginning if you let it analyze your whole library, and I let it do that. So I had to let it run overnight. I started it like in the late afternoon one day, and when I got up the next morning, it was waiting for me. But it took a while to crank through about 30 gigabytes of music.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Apple Weekly Report.
And by the way, everybody, before we finish up here, Macworld Conference and Expo, you may have heard of it. It's a thing that happens annually, previously biannually, but some people didn't like some other people, and some people, went to the doghouse, and some other people ate some cheese, and that doesn't happen anymore. Macworld Conference and Expo is happening in January. a few weeks from now, Jeff and I are actually going to talk at it. We're doing a thing together along with some other folks. We're not going to tell you about it now. We'll tell you about it next week, actually, but it should be really fun. So just keep an eye out for it. If you're going to be at the show, let us know. We'll make sure you know about what we're doing. And also, you know, we'd love to hear when people are at the show and talk to you and hear about what you guys do. And that way we don't always have to talk at you all the time. Anyway, so send us audio comments. Send us your version of the Context Machine. Send us stuff. roundup@macobserver.com. We love hearing from you. The content for this show is written by the fine people at the Mac Observer. This week also by Delbert from Texas. Del, thank you so much. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, as usual, for TMO. And that is all I've got.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online. Happy holidays.